Welcome to the Ronin Rabbit, a Usagi Yojimbo fan podcast. I'm your host, Ed Moore, and this is episode 62. Our book that we're looking at today is Usagi Yojimbo Volume 2, Issue 6, cover dated January 1994 from Mirage Publishing. It's a two-story book. The Lizard's Tale is the main, and Battlefield Part 1 is the second smaller tale. It involves a young Usagi. For those of you interested, you can send feedback to usagipodcast@gmail.com. I post the episodes on Facebook on the Usagi Yojimbo Dojo Facebook page. The website, bigtimenoise.com/ronin-rabbit, has places for comments, and the Ronin Rabbit has a Google Plus page. Now, we open A Lizard's Tale with a snowy scene whereby a Takagi apparently has fallen asleep, has been snowed on, and then has woken up, poking its head up out of the snow, realizing that it snowed. Looking around, he sees over to the side there a tree with an individual leaning up against the tree and a nice warm fire blazing also. The Takagi walks up over, flips up and looks at this figure against the tree from, you know, several different angles, above, below, to the side, all kind of cutish and playfully, notices the fire happily, and then snuggles up against this body and falls asleep. Well, we see that this body is Usagi. He wakes the next morning at the rising of the sun, suddenly realizes that he's surrounded by Takagi. My count had 17 different lizards laying around, not laying on him, but just laying around in clumps, snuggled up. So Usagi very carefully looks around, gets his bearings, tries to gather up his stuff, and is attempting to sneak through, kind of like a Daniel in the lion's den kind of situation, you know, where he's trying to sneak away from the Takagi. Ultimately, there are just too many. He ends up stepping on someone's tail. They wake up with a shout, waking up all the others. All of the Takagi are angered and take offense at the fact that their fellow was injured by this other creature. So they start circling Usagi in concentric circles, going opposite directions, getting ready to pounce. Finally, Usagi realizes that he's got a bag of food, and he tosses the food at them, and it flops open on the ground and spills some of its contents. Immediately, all the Takagi jump on that, allowing Usagi to run away. As he's running away, I noticed something that I think is kind of cool. Once again, Mr. Sakai giving us a little bit more detail. Looks like Usagi is wearing what I believe are fukagutsu, which are peasant-designed-driven boots that were woven from straw or perhaps reeds. So Usagi is wearing snow boots because he's in an area that's going to be prone to that. And Mr. Sakai drew them, and they pretty consistently are the shoe that is on Usagi every time you see his feet. So that's kind of cool. I like those little details like that the artist for a comic book will throw in, and I especially appreciate when they're consistent with that all the way through. Whenever that detail would be necessary, it appears again. So that's kind of cool. Usagi runs away, and as he's running, we see the Takagi have noticed his disappearance and are watching as he goes. He continues on towards the next village, and as he's passing villager after villager after villager, he notices that they're all reacting to him humorously, snickering, laughing. Finally, he stops in the midst of all of this villager traffic, and they're just uproariously laughing at him. And he's scratching his head, looking around, until finally he hears an eep, and he's just kind of startled because he knows what that means, and he looks behind him, and sure enough, there's the pack of Takagi that he encountered up in the mountains that has tracked him all the way down and is now following him. He screams at him really loud and scares him, and so they stampede off over villagers, knocking him down, around villagers, everything like that. And then he exclaims, now this story too is a silent story. Nobody says anything. So he exclaims with a big question mark as to, you know, what in the world is going on? And then he looks at those villagers that are around him and does the circle thing next to the head, indicating crazy, messed up kind of thing, and continues walking on to the next village, occasionally glancing over his shoulder, you know, behind him to make sure that the Tokagi are no longer there. He finds an inn, settles himself down, orders something to eat, and as he's standing there to eat, the innkeeper notices something and walks back up to Usagi, exclaiming and pointing at the door, and you see just outside at the door the pack of Tokagi rummaging around, looking inside and everything like that. And the shopkeeper telling Usagi basically that he has to leave and take these animals with you. Well, as he's frustratingly reaching into his tunic to pay for his meal, there are a group of gentlemen back in another room there that are watching that are laughing at Usagi's plight, but they take notice when he pulls out this bag of money and reaches inside to pay for his food. Usagi leaves, gives the Tokagi pack a stare like, you know, it's your fault, go away, leave me alone, however you want to interpret it, and then continues on his journey elsewhere. I like also here the fact that he has taken off his kasa, the kasa being that large, oval, peasanty kind of hat that you'll see a lot of times, shield from the sun and rain. He's holding it on his arm, and it very much looks like a shield rather than a hat. This plays a part here very soon because, again, the Tokagi pack starts to follow him too closely. He hears them and just whirls around, flinging his hat, much imitating what he did up in the mountains with the bag of food. So the Tokagi pack is confused, panels of them looking at him, looking at the hat, looking at him. Finally, they run and chase the hat. Usagi takes that opportunity to quickly hide behind a building, see that they're all interested in that hat, and he runs off. So now, later on, at some point, he's in the mountains or the foothills of the mountains outside the village, continuing his journey, enjoying his quiet walk, not being harangued by that Tokagi pack anymore. He's clear, you know, so everything's good. He's coasting. Walking around, notices that in front of him some stuff falls from the mountain because he's walking another one of these paths where you've got the sheer drop on the one side and the mountain face rising up on the other side. Well, some things are breaking loose and falling, so he glances up the mountain and shields his eyes with the sun and from the sun, and he's looking up at the top of the mountain and everything. For those of you that can't see me, which is basically everyone, I just went through a whole pantomime of movement there before I realized it as I was describing that. It probably would have been pretty funny, anyone seeing me do this, knowing that I'm using an audio medium to relay this. I thought it was kind of amusing, feeling myself doing all these things. So there you go. That's how into doing the show I get, guys, when I'm doing it. My hands are all over the place. We see, though, that at the top of the mountain are the four men who now turn out to be thugs or ne'er-do-well or whatever you want to call them, are attempting to dislodge some rocks to cause an avalanche. And they do succeed. The avalanche tumbles down the mountain. Usagi runs, attempting to evade the snow slide that has been started, but instead gets caught up in it and is tumbled and thrown and flipped all the way down the mountain into the valley below, where as he is regaining consciousness and trying to recover to his feet, the four thugs show up. One swiftly kicks Usagi across the jaw, knocking him out. The leader reaches into Usagi's tunic, palms the bag of money, and then another thug has picked up a large rock and is preparing to deliver the death blow to Usagi when the thugs are attacked by the pack of Tokagi. And at first, they're kind of holding their own, but eventually the viciousness and just the overwhelming numbers of the Tokagi pack overwhelm the thugs, and they run off screaming and crying into the woods. All of the Tokagi come back to Usagi, He wakes. He pushes himself up, and as he's standing, as he's, you know, kind of leaning up, he comes face to face with one of the Tokagi, smiling at him and gives him a playful eep. Eep seems to be the only thing the Tokagi say, by the way. So Usagi stands, you know, and he's trying to piece together everything that happened, and as he's looking around, he sees the remnants of the fight, dropped things, pieces of outfit that have been ripped off and everything like that. Looks at the Tokagi with that kind of look, one eye shut and the finger, you know, kind of tapping on his cheek as he's thinking and pondering. And then the final panel of the story, we see Usagi back at the restaurant, the inn where he initially went, with the pack of Tokagi inside. He is feeding everyone, motioning to the shopkeeper to bring him more food. The shopkeeper and his wife, very much taken aback. One of the other customers sitting over there in the corner doing the twirling finger around the head thing to indicate that Usagi is just crazy to be doing this. All right, the second story is a young Usagi story entitled Battlefield. And we start that tale with Usagi sitting on the ground on his behind, his practice sword, his boken, off to the side there, with Sensei Katoichi telling him, "You're improved. You blocked my blows for almost a full minute. Just another 2 hours of fencing practice, Usagi." Now, I am emoting much more than I believe he is here. And Usagi is, you know, "Wow, gee, thanks," rising to his feet. And he notices that there's a flock of crows that are flying west. And Katsuichi tells him that the carrion have caught scent of blood. And Usagi inquires, "Blood?" And he's told, "War." And here, there's a couple sections of text that I'm going to read to you, because these two sections, I believe, are the crux of this story. Usagi says, "You mean a battle? Who's at war?" Katsuichi tells him, "Lord Hikiji and Lord Mifune, who we know will go on to play an important part in the story, the origin story of our wandering Ronin, Usagi." Katsuichi tells him, "Hikiji is hungry for power and has been conquering his neighbor's provinces, but he thinks he has met his match with Lord Mifune." And here, Usagi exclaims excitedly, jumping around, wielding his boken animatedly as he's saying this, "Oh, I wish I were there to see the fighting, the deeds of bravery, the spectacle as the samurai ride into battle. Oh, the honor of the slain and the honor of the victors, to see the best of the warriors raise their challenges for individual combat, to be one of them, to hear the name Miyamoto Usagi spoken in awe by the enemy." And this whole time, Katsuichi is reaching down to his jug that he always carries at the end of his staff, taking a drink, capping it, and he just simply says, "You are a fool, aren't you?" And then suddenly, a armored combatant rushes out of the woods, screaming, "Help me, help me, help me." And ultimately, he collapses crying. So Katsuichi takes him home, feeds him, and the warrior is able to tell his side of the story. Usagi says, "What happened at that battle?" And the soldier says, "Battle? Blah, it was no battle, but a descent into hell. Let me tell you." And here is the opposing view of war, of being a soldier. "When I was young, an army passed through my village. They looked glorious with their flying banners and shiny armor. I was mesmerized, and I vowed then and there that I would someday be one of them. At last, I got my wish. I became an ashigaru, a foot soldier, and hoped to rise quickly in the ranks by deeds of bravery, but we were treated as little more than slaves, even having to wallow in the mud digging trenches for our defenses. Finally, it was the day of the great battle and my chance for glory and honor. I dreamt of, but Lord Mifune is a brilliant strategist and we were stopped at every turn. The battle quickly turned into a rout. Soldiers were being butchered all around me. It didn't matter which side you were on, you just fought to stay alive." And so there is our soldier here. Now, something interesting happens here, and I'm not quite sure I understand the significance of all of this, but the soldier's sitting there, and a fly is buzzing around, and he slaps the fly, and then he picks it up and looks at it and doesn't say anything. And then he rises and starts saying that he needs to leave. Usagi asks him, "What will you do when you get home?" And the samurai just says, "Home?" Ha ha, as he walks out. And then he's laughing as he's running across the field. So I'm not sure what all that means. He is now but a fly, perhaps. He is the same as this fly that he just squashed. He will be squashed subsequently for running in the midst of battle, perhaps. And Usagi says, "Do you think he'll be all right?" And Katsuichi says, "If it is his karma, he will be." Now, this struck something interesting in me, too, that I didn't really know and hadn't really thought about. Karma, as a concept, is inherent in the tenets of Hinduism and Buddhism. Japan has both of those religions endemic to its islands. So automatically, that would make Katsuichi a follower of one of those tenets. Older Usagi, whenever he's drawn, is typically drawn with his ears, okay, bound close to his head as unto a top knot that a human would wear. Between the top knot and actually Katsuichi wears his hair in a top knot as well. So with the top knots and the reference to karma, my thinking is that we're being told that both Katsuichi and Miyamoto Usagi follow Buddhist tenets. I'm not sure necessarily that that is important per se, but I think it is something to note because I'm sure at some point it will be used more than at other points. And this is the first time that it really dawned on me that perhaps we had seen things that would give us further insight into the makeup of the characters, particularly Miyamoto Usagi. So not only is he a follower of the code of Bushido, he is a Ronin, as we know, and probably also a Buddhist as well. Just information, perhaps. Nothing more. Katsuichi gathers Usagi and tells him, "Come on, let's go up this way." And ultimately, they get to a rise overlooking the battlefield, and we see on the battlefield many, many, many dead soldiers killed by various methods, dead horses, just the typical scene of a shogunate-era army battle carnage left behind after all the living and injured would have left. This is just the dead that has been left there. And Usagi sees this, and of course it leaves an impression in his young mind as an exclamation point in a word balloon. That's whatever sound that would be. And so that is where this particular story finishes up. The first part, let's see, what was it called? The Lizard's Tale. Was that quiet story that I was saying a couple episodes ago that I was kind of looking forward to, and here was one of them. It had humor, had a little bit of drama, but mostly it was a humor tale. I liked that. I liked the fact that it was nonverbal. That was cool, too. Anything that happened, you were supposed to put it together yourself. There wasn't really too much subtlety to it, so I mean, it was pretty obvious what was going on, but still, you filled in the gaps. There were no texts, there were no explanations, no narrator, anything like that. So that was all kind of cool. Next time out, guys, Usagi Yojimbo, Volume 2, Issue Number 7, cover dated April 1994, as given to us by Mirage Publishing. Talk to you guys next time. The Ronin Rabbit Podcast is a Teal production, and as such, is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Non-Derivatives 3.0 Unported License.